International football ain't easy, and Sinclair's given everything, every single game. Off the pitch, she's doing more than she's ever done before to keep this team connected. She's the pride of our country, and she's going to stay that. And we should be proud of what that woman's putting into this Women's World Cup for our team.
I mean, what more can you say than what John Herdman said about Christine Sinclair? Just fantastic, fantastic player. Definitely the eye of the tiger in that one.
Beautiful.
Welcome to the 14th edition of the Pop and Joe podcast. I am Joe Franchese, and to my left is Dario Pop Passarelli.
Hello, everyone.
So, I mean, Pop, that eye of the tiger has definitely spurred the country for a very long time. I mean, longer than most of us have actually paid attention to, sadly. But you think that's a little bit of posturing going into a quarterfinal match, knowing that we still haven't seen the best of Sinclair, or if there is any more of the best of Sinclair?
You know, regardless of what she does from here on out, they've done their job. Reaching the quarterfinals, I think, was a victory for the Canadian team. I don't think people, you know, they're eighth. They're part of the eight teams that are left right now, so that's awesome. They play a sixth-ranked English team, which they did beat 1-0 going into the tournament, but that was a jet-lagged English team that's coming in. So, you know, we'll see what happens when they play on Saturday. But getting back to Sinclair, she doesn't have to score to have a great tournament. I mean, it was her touch on the ball that set up Belanger for the 1-0 victory this past Monday. And I think she has always been a tough competitor, something that Canadians love.
Right.
We love our fighters.
Yeah.
You know, she's not the pretty talented one, those are talent, but she's the gritty kind
right.
of player that we all come to love. And she does deserve all the credit that John Herdman has been giving her away.
She's definitely a unique skill set, especially I find in soccer, where most of your uber talented players tend to be a little bit more of your fragile players. They don't necessarily bring physicality as well as the skill and talent that she has. Like, her ball handling's fantastic. She's a great dribbler and great touch. And most likely when you think that, you don't think she's the toughest player on the field. You would say, oh yeah, I mean, talented player. But she brings a sense of physicality, a sense of toughness that you can definitely see within the rest of the club. And that's something I think is great to watch when you're watching Canada's women's soccer team, because they really do hate everybody they play. And you can tell they do. They're strong challenges, and most importantly, they don't give up much, as well as they don't give up. And a credit of that must also be given to Herdman, because it's amazing to see a person not from Canada say our country.
I was going to point that out, and you beat me to it.
I apologize.
No.
Saying things like our country and we should be proud and our country is lucky. The passion that guy has for his adopted country right now is probably more so than any Canadian right now just watching. It's fantastic. It's so cool to see.
And should be not minimized in any way, shape, or form. And I said, I'm very happy that, you know, we've been away for the last couple of weeks from each other, but very happy that we've both picked up on the same thing. And I'm hoping that there's more people out there that listen to that interview and follow it and say, you know, Christine is someone that we can get behind. So much so, she is the senior member of this team. You go back to 2012 at the Olympics in London, getting the hat trick against USA in a losing cause.
Oh, it was heartbreaking.
Based on a complete muff-up by the referee.
That was like the king of the BS call.
And I'm not going to sit here and say I'm biased or anything. It was a complete muff-up. They win the bronze, unbelievably. And you come into this tournament here in your own country, so much pressure on. So much pressure on her being that star player of the host country. And what do? And they heap even more pressure by their slogan saying, let's do it for Christine.
Right.
Let's do it for Sinclair. The team, The team's rallying call is "Let's do it for St. Clair." A member of their own team. Like, how does that happen? And she can live with that. She can live with that kind of pressure. We saw it the very opening game of the tournament against the Chinese. 90th minute, injury time. Beautiful penalty kick when she couldn't even hear anything with the crowd. Right. 50,000 so loud. So, you know, she deserves all the praise. She's earned it. And she continues to demonstrate that she deserves it, too.
I think their slogan is definitely a big factor and a big characteristic of the way the team looks at this tournament. I think they intelligently understand that, unlike in a men's World Cup, where you have about 4 to 6 very high-end top competitors that a 9th or 10th ranked team wouldn't be able to step up to, Canada has a chance against everybody, I'd say, other than Germany. And when you look at the German squad's ability to score, and we were doing some work on the Women's World Cup, I mean, they came into the tournament with 62 goals in 10 games in qualification. They've already scored 19 goals in 4 games. Their offensive prowess is ridiculous. They're also just as physical. That's, I think, what Canada realized. That, yes, they have won because they have gotten farther than anyone expected. But, yes, I think they understand that there is a far greater chance for them to continue to advance if they believe in themselves and play their game. And we're still sitting here saying, well, we still haven't seen the best from Christine Sinclair, which could be their wild card, could be their ace in the hole, because she can, you know, go with the best of them. I personally have, I'm pretty excited for them. I think they have a very serious chance of beating through England and potentially getting to the World Cup final. Do I think they could win? No, because I feel like they'd be facing off against Germany, to be honest with you. But they'll be intriguing, I have to say. And I think their attitude says a lot for their club.
I agree. I think, and I'm not as familiar as I'd like to be in terms of women's football. Watching the England game, I noticed that the passing maybe wasn't as crisp as I'm used to seeing in Europe, European soccer. And there should definitely be some improvement, not just with Christine Sinclair, but with a lot of the team as well.
Right.
But I said last week that one thing that has been favorable, it's not that they have an easy path to advance, but they have one of the easier paths, is what I want to say. They played the Swiss, that was, you know, not in the top 16 ranked, as far as I remember. And now they're playing England, which is only 6th ranked. You know, they could have faced one of the top 5.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. I think they have an excellent chance. I think that their determination, and you keep mentioning only Germany as being the potential, And you neglect to mention the States.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if that's because, not so much in terms of their game against them back in London during the Olympics, but I wonder if that's just this whole Canadian-American mentality thing where, you know, when push comes to shove, we hate the Americans so much, in a good way, not in a bad way, in a competitive way.
I hate you.
But that seems to spur us on.
Right.
And we put on great performance, whether it's men's hockey, whether it's women's hockey. You know, not saying that we win all the time, but we come to play.
Yes.
When we face the Americans. And if the Americans beat us, we know that they beat us with us playing our best.
And I think that's the key.
And even if we lose, we're okay with that.
Right. And I think that's the reason why I leave off America as a potential titan to get through, because when you look at the States games against Canada over the last, I'd say, 4 or 5 years, there has been a significant increase in the ability of Canada to at least be in the game. And whether or not they can win is not based on them getting blown out. And I think maybe that's what I can foresee happening if they play Germany. Whereas if they play the States, if they won 2-1, the States won 2-1, no one would sit there being like, wow, I didn't see that coming, or I can't believe Canada lost, or I can't believe the States lost. And a part of it, too, you look at the States, I think they seem to have a little bit of the same construction as Canada. They have a lot of skill. They play a little bit of a physical game also. And they're being led by an elder statesman.
And they have a potential convict in that. Oops, I shouldn't have gone there.
Dude, if she finds you, game over.
Game over.
She'll
already
take off the goalie gloves. Those things are soft and cushy. If she takes them off, you're done.
But you know, I'm pretty sure that they don't play any soccer games in Toronto, so I'm good. I'm pretty good.
Yeah. We could. There's no way Toronto could have hosted one of these matches. We only have Canada's soccer field. It's called Canadian National Soccer Field when it's not BMO Field. But we couldn't have it here. That would make no sense. But there's like 12 places in Woodbridge they could have played.
But you know what, though?
Like, I can't believe you didn't come here. I know. It pisses me off.
I know. And but that's us being selfish to a certain degree. Because Toronto is the center of the world, as Torontonians always seem to think, having lived abroad. I know that. But reality is.
But it is in Canada.
But give kudos where kudos are due. Whether it's been BC Place, whether it's been Moncton, whether it's been Edmonton, the attendance, as far as I can tell, especially for the Canadian games, has been phenomenal. I mean, forget about the fact that it's women's soccer.
Right.
And I stress that. They had 50,000 plus to a soccer game, period.
I know.
And that in itself is incredible, and it's women's soccer. So fantastic to, I'm not going to say the organizers, but to the support that this has gone. And go back to the interview where we led the show off with John Herdman. During that same interview, they interviewed the Swiss coach, who is German. She's played for Germany. I forgot her name right now. But when they asked her, you know, any more questions, and she said no, and she's about to leave, and she sat back down, and they turned her mic back on, and she goes, I just want to take a moment to say thank you to the Canadian support for the women's soccer. It's been phenomenal. And she went on and applauded us and, you know, finally left and saying, this is a fantastic country. And she got, you know,
awesome,
a round of applause as she left from the press there, because it was surprising. So, and deservedly so. So, like I said, when you get 50,000 to a game, and I don't know what the averages are, but the support has been there for women's soccer. It's great to see.
No, for sure. Like, shout out to the rest of Canada, like, doing a fantastic job. And I'm not saying this as, like, the bigger brother from Toronto or something. I don't think that they should have taken the tournament away from other cities and only had it in Toronto. I just think it's very weird that it didn't even come to Toronto once. I understand because of the Pan Am Games.
Well, we understand what the excuse is, but it's still a stupid excuse.
Understandable. I agree. Because when you think of every World Cup, what happens? Where is it held? The country's center. And, I mean, Germany, Berlin, you know, France, Paris. Like, and Toronto not being the home of at least the World Cup final, I know that would have killed everybody. Like, Canada would have been so pissed. Like, imagine what Edmonton would think. Like, they get, like, semis. And, like, Montreal gets a semi. They don't play one game in Toronto qualification. Boom, final in Toronto.
You know what, though?
They would be so pissed. But that's what you should do, ultimately. If I was in Vancouver, I would say the same thing.
And, you know, if I was the league, though, but think about it. They got 50,000 people in BC Place. How much can they fit at BMO Field? They can only fit a top, what, 30,000?
After
the renovations?
Sure.
So, I mean, that's...
But, you know, the other thing, too, is you could also, you know, have maybe the ACC open and have people go and pay and sit in the ACC and watch the game. I would imagine, you know, Maple Leaf Square would be packed. I would assume the Ricoh Coliseum could also do the same thing. I mean, it would be a massive spectacle. I know you're right about the amount of tickets and stuff. The 50,000 definitely overshadows what I'm saying. But it's more so the prestige, I guess. It's tough. I mean, I know Canada probably hates me right now, and I'm sorry. But ultimately, you got to play the game in, you know, the biggest city in the country to show it off.
Joe, do you want Canada to hate you more?
They already do, so... It's better to be hated than loved on radio, man.
Put it this way. They're going to hate both of us. Maybe you can salvage some of that hate. Maybe I can throw some of the hate into mine. I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell you up front, I'm going to ask you this question, and I don't know the answer.
Interesting.
And I'm embarrassed that I don't know the answer.
That is a first. Took 14 shows. Pop doesn't know the answer.
No. That's not true. Took 14 shows for Pop to admit
that's
he doesn't know an answer.
Agreed.
That's something. Where is the Women's World Cup final?
I want to say Montreal.
Are you saying that because it's...
the bigger city. I want to say Montreal.
But you don't know. You
I
don't
do not know. Let's find it out. We're going to throw it out there.
No, we have our statistician coming out.
All right, Alex in the back.
Alex in the back.
Oh. Oh,
we have to keep stalling for time.
Producer Alex but taking his time.
Like I said, you know, I'm so bent on this whole they shun Toronto thing that I don't even know where the World Cup final is playing. But I will say this.
Wow, that is an interesting question, I got to say.
I still hope that Canada is in there somehow in the finals. That would be nice.
It would be awesome, I have to say.
And it would be fitting for Christine St. Clair, who, you know, there still is this love for anybody that's fond of sports, that likes sports, that, you know, may or may not even like the game of soccer, for what she's done for his country. And you couldn't have said it any better than what John Herman said. I mean, it was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Oh, drum roll.
BC plays Vancouver.
I think the 50,000 went out there. And wow. You know what? You're going to do a great job again. How can we not go wrong there? They hosted the Olympics. They did a fantastic job
in the Olympics.
So we love you out there on the West Coast. We sincerely do.
But you're just not Toronto. As cool as Toronto. Sorry, West Coasters.
I'm ducking under the table right now.
You know, I mean, Canada's been... they've been kind of dominating in another aspect also. I mean, you've seen the NHL awards. I mean, Canada was on full display. And Carey Price definitely did the country proud last night.
Definitely, definitely did. And I'm just going to take one slight second before I talk about Carey Price.
Sure, go for it.
Say just to try and salvage some, you know, the three listeners that we have out west, like we've lost. Maybe if we can get one of them back by saying... yeah, how many Maple Leafs actually won any trophies? Yeah. So when we're talking about how much we prop Toronto should have had a soccer game, that's because we've got...
we suck.
Suck in almost every other sport. We
suck at everything, yeah, absolutely.
So that's where it is. But again, Carey Price, how can you go wrong with any of those calls?
No, you can't at all.
And I'm trying to remember a quote, I think it was Michael Grange. And I don't know if he retweeted someone else's or if it was his own. If it was his own, I'll give him kudos for it. But how right Carey Price was to thank his teammates, because they were so bad that it made him 100%. Look so good.
Absolutely.
So he should have thanked his teammates.
You know what? I mean, I might get a lot of negative feedback again. I'm like just going through every single city in
this
country.
You are bitter than I am today, Joe.
I don't know why. But I really think that without Carey Price, Montreal really is not a good team. I think they're... I swear to God.
You think?
I swear
like,
to
holy
you.
Holy smokes.
I think they are, like, at best, a bubble team without Carey Price. You look at that roster, it's not that good, man. Like, it's just... Listen, Montreal fans, now listen to me. Because I know, because we go through it all the time, you signed Jeff Petrie to $5.5 million a year, man. You have $14.5 million in between Subban and Petrie. That's a bad contract. Like, this team had to fill a void with Jeff Petrie at $5.5 million because they know defensively they're not that great. That sucks. But Carey Price, unreal. And it hurts me because, yes, I am a Leaf fan. And it hurts so much to love Carey Price, but I love Carey Price. I think he's unbelievable. And it's so nice to see him win. And it sucks because he's a Hab, but ultimately he's Canada's goalie, and I love him for it. And he deserved all the praise. Absolutely, he did. Also, shout out Randy Carlyle. Got a vote for Coach of the Year.
Kudos to that one.
And did better than Horacek.
I want to say, you're getting on your rant there, and I know we lost two out of the three West Coast visitors. Now you're trying to separate us again
from
Quebec.
Canadian. Ooh, boo,
but,
separate.
But the truth of the matter is that since none of them actually care to listen to anything in English, we haven't lost anything. So
we're okay.
I'm going to take care of that for you. I'm going to take some of the heat off of you and say, hey, Montreal, without le Carey Price, you le suck.
Right, 100%.
So,
they would all walk out Patrick Waugh style. Like, hey. We're gone.
We're gone.
We're going to Colorado. This team blows. Like,
and you know why we can say that? Do you know why we can say that?
Because we know.
No. It's that we know. Obviously, we know.
Because we've seen sucking.
Because we know that even without Carey Price and how sucky you are, you're still ahead of the Leafs.
Yeah, by like
you
12
are
cups.
Still ahead of the Leafs by 8 positions, and then. Like, even this year, you're still better than the Leafs.
No, 100%. I said they were a bubble team. I didn't even say, like, they're not going to be in the playoffs. I was like, well, it could be eighth, you know. But good for him. Good for him. It was fantastic to watch. And, by the way, did you see Yuri Hudler's speech?
No, I did not.
Oh, my God. He was so drunk. Like, okay, he came up there with Flames-colored socks. And he walks up. He's like, oh, I'm not wearing shoes. And everyone's like, okay. Then he started telling stories, and it was getting, like, ridiculous. Like, everyone was just sitting there looking at him, and they're just like, oh, man, Yuri Hudler, like, a little too many wobbly pops before he walked up there.
It was in Vegas, right?
Oh, yeah. 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 And then, and on the Flames front, good for Bob Hartley.
Yes.
For a guy who everybody didn't like for a long period of time, he's definitely turned his image around, I gotta say.
He's got some much needed hardware now. Much deserved hardware. Not needed, but deserved hardware.
I mean, the guy's got a cup, too. Guys forget with Colorado he won a Stanley Cup.
But, I mean, the Flames are such a great story this year.
Yes.
And I said, it's nice to see that things going out. And wow. Like, for the finals being Chicago-Tampa Bay, we had Carey Price from the Montreal Canadiens winning 4 awards.
Yep.
We had Carlson winning Norris.
Yep.
From the Ottawa Senators.
Bergeron Selke,
who was is with the Bruins, though, right?
Yep.
But I'm just saying is that, like, Canadian teams and Calgary won
2
awards.
Yep.
Right? So, like, that's 7 awards that went to 3 Canadian teams.
Right. Not to mention Jamie Benn, who is Canadian, winning the Art Ross. Jonathan Taves winning the Captain or Best Leadership Award, the Mark Messier Award.
Yeah, but he won something even more important than that, didn't he?
I don't know, it's this drink mug.
No.
It's a big keg, isn't it?
No, him and Kane, they won cover of EA Sports.
That's it, cover of EA Sports.
That's what they
and
won.
And then that cup, that one thing. That thing, we have it all the time in Toronto. We don't own it, but it's just like in this building. It's an old thing. I forgot what it's called.
That's why we get jilted so much, right?
Right.
It's because
it's just here.
Across the summer, it gets on the Stanley Cup tour,
yeah.
Right? But then it stays in Toronto.
Maybe that's the Leafs' problem. Maybe it's like absence makes the heart grow fonder, and the thing you have all the time you don't care about. It's like when you have that old Nintendo video game at home, and you never play it, right? But then your buddy comes over, and then he's playing it, and you're like, just let me play. And he's like, man, you have it all the time. Why do you got to play it now? And you're like, because you're playing it.
Exactly.
So I think that's the Leafs' problem. Like, if Fanouf wants to go raise the cup, just pay, you know, $30.
He can go to the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Yeah, walk into the Hall of Fame. They'll probably let him touch it. And there you go. Take a pick. Game over, right? That's what makes Toronto so special.
But
we always have the cup.
Maybe that's also another part that the Leafs can do because, you know, they need to try so many things. Just like the Nintendo games, maybe they need to blow on the cup.
Interesting.
I mean,
interesting. Bottom down.
It's like nothing else has worked so far this year.
No. No, nothing has worked. Listen. The Leafs haven't won a cup for so long that, like, I don't even think people wish for it anymore. They just wish for, like, terribly, like, average things. Like, oh, man, I just want the Leafs to, like, compete in April. You know?
Yeah,
well. Or, like, they've become Blue Jays fans. Oh, man, I just want meaningful hockey in April. Like, you know, I was quoted as saying, you can ask my buddies at work. I was like, I don't want the Leafs to be good anymore. I just want cool jerseys. Like, just get Joel Thornton. That'd be sick. I know he's older, but whatever.
So I don't know. I remember back in the day in terms of with basketball.
Yeah.
And I say back in the day.
90s.
Going, yeah. Well, not even that far back.
What, are we talking like Huskies?
No, I'm talking like a few years back.
Oh.
Going, it's not so much that, you know, I want meaningful games towards the end of the season.
Yeah.
I just want, what I wanted for the Raptors was that the regular season to be more exciting and more impactful than the off season. Because for the longest time with the Raptors, it was, who are they going to draft? Who are they going to trade for? What are they going to do this? And then there was so much excitement over the off season build leading up into training camp.
Right.
I want it the other way around.
That's true. I love the Leafs off season. Unreal.
Isn't it?
Best part of the year.
And for the next 2-3 years, that's going to be the most exciting time, is their offseason, what they do, not what goes on in the ice, not what happens during the season.
Yeah.
So at some point, we're going to hope for the same thing for the Leafs. But for now, we're living the dream, baby. We're living the dream.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, the Leafs could potentially have the chance of making a splash at the draft tomorrow night. This splash could ultimately be bigger than Mike Babcock when you think about it. All great coaches have a great player that almost supersedes them and makes them look fantastic. And in this draft, I think the Maple Leafs have a fantastic chance in doing that in the fourth selection. There's at least three or four players slated in 3 to 6 that could be fantastic. What I think, though, I actually ended up writing my article on this, is that...
Great article.
Thank you. Check it out on the Toronto Observer on the sports section. And it's that if the Leafs and Babcock were serious about bringing Ontario talent back home, then they better start with Ontario talent in the draft, because that's the only way you're going to really start this. The opportunity of a Strom or a Marner falling into your lap at 4, there's an extra intangible there. And it's even something that the Raptors could be facing with their pick, because apparently there's a Toronto boy who's very close and could be slated to go to them. And I know it sounds stupid for that to actually be an intangible, but I think for the Maple Leafs, what they're looking for in skill and personality, especially being able to, like, I was able to speak to Marner, I was able to speak to Strom's coaches, and even the trainers around Marner said fantastic things about them. And they have both the characteristics, the personality, the skill set to be something that you would want. And they're from Toronto. I mean, they're from your backyard. I hope they get it right. And I think this draft could potentially lead the Leafs down the right track, even more so than their coach.
I don't know what you say. I'm not sure in terms of the extra intangible it brings in terms of bringing an Ontario player here. I will say this. There's a difference between picking 4th and picking 20th, right, in terms of the Raptors, right, and the Leafs. At 20th, you can take much more of a risk because nobody expects the 20th pick, especially in the NBA draft, to amount to anything.
Sure.
And rarely have they amounted to anything. The 4th pick, however, you better get it right. Whether it's Dylan Strom, whether it's Mitch Marner, whether it's somebody else, you just better get it right. Now, I go back to what Babcock said, and there's one little itty-bitty sentence that I haven't heard people talk about enough. He said, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the exact words he used was to make it safe for them to come play.
But once we make it safe.
Once we make it safe. Now, number one, I don't know if they've done anything to make it safe for them to come play, but right, they can always bring him up and ship him to the Marlies for the first year, which more than likely they probably will spend.
Well, depending on the player, right?
Depending on the player.
Yeah.
But my point being is that this, and this is one thing that I completely disagree with McCowan. McCowan always says that, you know, for a hockey player, playing in Toronto is the same as playing anywhere else. And I cannot disagree with him more. I think the media and the fans and whatever make it so hard to play here.
Right. I agree with you. Because I think we talked about this before.
We talked about this before.
We say it goes uphill, not downhill in Toronto.
And I'm curious to see how they make it safe.
Right.
And I trust that Babcock and Shanahan can, because I think that's how they did in Detroit. Because Detroit's not, you know, not a Toronto, but they're not a know-nothing-about-hockey market either. I mean, it's a very strong hockey market out there. But they have a way of not only drafting well, but bringing these players up. Right? Again, we keep talking about their... Do you even call it luck in terms of what they do when they're in their later rounds?
No, at this point, it's just fantastic scouting.
Exactly.
And great development.
And development. Yeah. Both, right? It's yin and yang kind of thing.
Yeah, hand in hand.
And so hopefully the same thing comes to Toronto, and I'd love to see one of those kids here.
Right.
I mean, it would be... If that's the right fit in terms of what's going on, apart from one of those two choices, which it looks like it will be one of those two choices. Right. What else are you looking forward to in the draft? Is it the draft itself? or the potential of all these trades, because the impression I'm getting is that it's such a buyer's market rather than a seller's.
Right.
In terms of trades. And all I keep hearing is that the Leafs are asking too much. The Leafs are asking for too much.
Good for them. I mean, ultimately, if somebody came out and said the Leafs are asking for too little, what would you think of the management group?
Well, I don't think anybody would say that. I think you'd see the trades already made, right?
Exactly. I think what I'd be, what I'm looking for, and before I get to that, I'd maybe be able to answer your Babcock question. I think the way in which Babcock makes it safe for the Toronto Maple Leafs and for players from Ontario to come back to Toronto is that Mike Babcock is now the Toronto Maple Leafs. He is the face of the franchise. There's been questions before when Burke, for example, was the face of the franchise, if that was the right move. I think what Mike Babcock does as the face of the franchise is he's okay with getting ripped. He's okay with being questioned because he doesn't give a bleep. And I think that's the best part of Mike Babcock. And that's something that him and Ken Holland did very well in Detroit. The last 2 years, Detroit has been calling for Mike Babcock to get fired. I'm not saying everybody. I'm saying
there's a portion of people.
There's a portion. Honestly, they're crazy. And, you know, it's like if right now Chicago fans in like 20 games going into the next season, you know, they lose like 10 in a row. You fire Quenneville. You're nuts. But what Babcock and Holland did is they literally said, I don't care. That's great. That's what you think? You know, Joe from Woodbridge, that's what you think? I don't care. And what Babcock said about Dion Phaneuf, I think, set a very big precedence. I think Randy Carlyle did a decent job at. I think Ron Wilson did a horrendous job at. And I think Pat Quinn probably did the best job at. He came out and said something as well as Pat Quinn did for players that he believes he should insulate was, we need to help Phaneuf get better. We need to make it better for Phaneuf. Dion is a good player. He gets a raw deal. We need to make sure to allow to help Dion to further himself and get to that better place. And that's something I've said. I'm not saying that me and Babcock are the same mind. I'm saying that's something I've also said. In that, yeah, okay, Phaneuf is not a number one defenseman. De facto number one. But, man, who has he played with? I mean, you look at Keith Seabrook. You look at Weber at times. Seth Jones. Yossi. Ryan Suter. You look at, you know, Chris Letang, Brooks Orpik, Rob Scuderi in his prime. Phaneuf has had Gunnarsson, Keith Ollie. I mean, at some points...
Who?
Exactly. He's had players that are not even close to his caliber of defensemen. I think they bring him down a bit. But I think his belief in becoming the face of the franchise and absorbing all the garbage is how he insulates the club. Going into the draft, I think we're going to get a little glimpse in what the Leafs think of this team and where they think they can hold on to players. I wouldn't be surprised if the names you see moved are the second tier of names. I wouldn't be surprised if it's the Loopholes, the Bozaks, the Gardeners, and maybe the one or two of the double picks the Leafs have in the third and fourth round. Because even Phil Kessel is only 27 years old. If the Leafs are good in 5 years, he's 32, 31, depending on when they get better. Man, Ovechkin scored 55 at 30 years old. I'm not saying Ovechkin is Phil Kessel or Phil Kessel's Ovechkin. I'm saying nobody is done at 30 years old unless you're severely injured.
No, and I'm going to have to agree with you on that regard. I don't think... And here's where I still have mistrust of the Leafs organization. Because I think it was them who said, we want to move Kessel, Phaneuf by trade deadline. Was it them that said it? But I remember kept reading saying that, you know, they were looking to move.
I think what you're talking about is right before the deadline, they had that meeting and Brendan Shanahan came out and said, we've started evaluating our players and those that we feel no longer should be here will not be here very soon.
Okay.
Because I don't think they came out and said they wanted to trade Phil Kessel.
I thought like within the last like 3 weeks to a month, I heard or I read somewhere.
I don't think they denied that they would. I think they've came out with the whole, and I think Nonis did also when he said, I'll trade anybody if it's a good deal.
It's just, I think like it's kind of a stupid thing to do to pigeonhole yourself into, you know, a timeline or frame of mind and saying that, you know, we're trying to get, oh, you're looking to sell my trade. Okay, then I'll give you nothing for him kind of thing.
So it's like what Vancouver did with Bobby Lou.
Right, you put yourself in not a very good position. The way Kessel and Phaneuf ended off the season, obviously, you're not dealing from a position of strength here. So I don't believe that you should be pressurized to trade them by draft, the draft day. I don't think you should be pressured, feel pressured into trading them by the first game of the season. Maybe let them play 20 games. Maybe let them play 40 games. Maybe their stock value goes up again.
Right.
You know? And then, you know, towards the trade deadline, say, hey, maybe we can get more better value for them. But, yeah, I wouldn't surprise me if I think right now Bozak is like a second rounder or something like that.
Yeah, that's what they're offering. He's good value at 4.2.
Yeah, I think more of that along the lines of, I think the Leafs are going to do something just to say, hey, we're movers and shakers kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, again, I don't think any of those big names are going to go.
Well, Pop, here's the question. I mean, do you believe the team is better suited with addition by subtraction, or let's see what this club is made of again if we can't get the right deals? Because I think that's what you're hinting at, and it's tough because if they make bad deals for addition by subtraction, will we sit there and say, oh, what a stupid move? I mean, I understand you want to make a change, but you can't hinder your team's future. But then say, if they come in with a decent roster, nobody bites, they come close at ninth, you know, or squeak in at eighth, whatever. Because, I mean, this club was a playoff team with Carlisle, and it hated Horacek, clearly. And Babcock is infinitely better than Horacek. No offense, Pete. Sorry, buddy. He's definitely better than Randy Carlisle right now. But what if they're a playoff team for him and, boom, rebuilds out the window? I mean, that's my question to you. Do you think it's better addition by subtraction or hold out and then potentially could have a replication of the almost there but not there?
Do I what I think or what I think the management...
Well, what do you think? And then we can break down what we think the management will do.
Personally, I think you try and get as much as you can for those players.
Right now, regardless?
No.
Okay.
No. I don't think there's a rush process.
Okay.
I still look at the rebuild as being, you know, a three-year process minimum, meaning... Yes, I would like to get these people out, but if it's not the best thing for me, I don't have a problem with having a Kessel and a Phaneuf with me for most of, if not an entire other year, simply because the people that I am putting my money on to change this franchise around more than likely won't be with the Leafs organization this year. So they're not going to be negatively influenced by the, you know, a country club mentality, whatever kind of mentality that's there.
Right.
Secondly, even if they, you know, something like a Strome or Marner is capable enough to play with the Leafs day one.
Yeah.
The one thing that Babcock has over any of the other coaches is, hey, Phil, I make almost exactly what you make.
He actually makes what he makes for the first 3 years.
So it's like, you know what?
There's going to be pain.
And you know what? That coach has this guarantee that he can bench a Kessel if he's not up. He can do those things. I mean, it might take him off of his market value kind of thing, but then again, if Kessel comes back and plays better, we'll increase it tenfold.
Right.
So I still think you have the ability to not rush into it, take your time, and I don't think it's going to impact your overall 3 to 5 year plan.
See, I am a big proponent of Phil Kessel. I enjoy his game because I understand his game. Kessel plays 80 games a year because he doesn't go into the corner. He scores his points without a solid center and a very capable left winger who is very talented but not a great playmaker. Kessel is a necessary piece in any win, in any championship. However, what I'm scared about, and although it pains me to say, I really think the addition by subtraction is the better choice here. And here's why. What if Phil Kessel turns it around? How do you trade a 90-point guy again? it's impossible. It would be stupid again. Because Kessel at 90 points making $8 million a year is now become a value pick. When you look at guys like Kane, Kane makes 10.5 now. He's no longer 5 mil. Taves makes 10 and a half also. Crosby makes 8.7. He barely put up 90. He didn't even put up 90 points this year. Stamkos didn't even put up 85 points this year. And Stamkos could potentially make more than $10 million.
Yep.
I read an article that James Van Riems that called Mike Babcock and said, I'm really pumped for this. Like, I want to get to the rink now. I'm so excited. I read a bunch of articles that other guys also did the same. Never read one about Phil. This isn't me critiquing him because I don't know whether he did. But if he didn't, the case is clearly that addition by subtraction is necessary because Phil doesn't seem to wouldn't have seemed to bought in. And by doing that, I think you're just moving on. And like I say this all the time, the Leafs are that really, 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 really hot wife that just keeps cheating on you. But then she comes back and she's so hot, you keep her.
But I love you.
I know, and you're like, oh, you're so hot. And I think that's the problem with the club now. They have such really, really hot players, but they just cheat on them and they ruin their lives. You gotta. It's sad to say, I feel like you have to move on, but I wouldn't be upset if they keep Phil Kessel and he turns it around. But the way the club has ended the last couple years, I think whatever you can get for them right now just to start fresh and have a new, you know, a new team is the better choice.
See, I have a very tough battle going on inside my head because I don't know what's worse. If you bringing up the analogy of the hot wife is worse.
Okay.
Or me actually understanding the analogy of the hot wife is worse. All I'm saying is that together we are just sad, sad people.
Right.
And that's a shout out to everybody else that's outside the Toronto area again.
Yeah.
See how much better lives you are. We have to pick on them because
we pick just, up the town.
We just keep getting cheated on.
100%. So hard too, and like, but she's so good looking, and why? Why does she do that? Well, because she's the Leafs, and that's the biggest issue with the club. It'd be cool, though. I mean, if the Leafs are able to get, you know, their number one center in Strom, your kind of flex winger center in Marner, I think it would put them not ahead of where they should be, but where they should be. Because that's what they're missing. I mean, since Matt Sundin, nobody's been able to step into that center role.
Correct.
And
or goaltender role. I mean,
I know, yeah. Bernier is still a question mark.
Oh, a huge question mark. And so is Reimer. And I think, Belfour was the last real goalie we had?
Yeah, I mean, Ray Kraft hurts me because you know he owns the Leafs' win record in goal? He owns it, man. He's got 38 wins. He's the most winning goalie in one season. You know what the best part is? He played like 78 games. Or I don't even think he was 500 and he won 38 games. Like, it's ridiculous. And, you know, they've gone through them. Like, they've got Ray Kraft, Toskala, Telkvist, Oben.
Tuukka.
Yeah, that guy sucks. Tuukka Rask, what's he done? Like, they just hurt me, this club. And, like, Justin Poggi, 5 games. 5 games, Ron Wilson. Do you remember that when he called a timeout? And he literally he called it to yell at Justin Poggi. And, like, he literally looked at him and he was like, wake up. He goes in, boom, goal, 5-hole. Never saw Justin Poggi again. Yep. Never saw him. It sucks. But you look at Bernier, he might be a question mark. But I think we know what he is. I think he is a normal starter in the NHL right now. He is the type of starter that I think teams like Edmonton would drool over because he can play hockey and make saves, you know? But the problem with Bernier that I defended early on that is starting to get a lot harder to defend is the mental lapse goals where you're like, geez. Like, come on. And unlike Reimer, who lets in the goals where you're like, oh, beat again. There you go. Yep, glove hand. Okay, yep, 5-hole. There you go. Bernier's are like,
they're killers.
Oh, man, I'm just going to go get it. What the heck just happened? Yeah. Or you're like, oh, I'm just going to go get a beer. You come back and you're like, why is it 1-0?
Fleury, Pittsburgh. Same kind of thing, right?
Yeah, you know what? That is a decent comparison. I mean, he does have a little bit of the Fleury in that he could be so stellar. And in 1 second, you're just like,
Oh, there's a shot from the other blue line.
Yeah. Oh man, that was bad. That was really bad. I mean, it wasn't. I don't know. You think Toskla's was worse or better? I give Toskla credit. That thing bounced like crazy. It was like a wiffle ball.
There's just no selling it. No. Like, I mean, they're just both so bad. And I, like I said, it's just overall, there's a lot of changes here. The one thing, I don't even know if I want to say this, because I'm going to be happy.
Oh, my God, so say it. Now you got to say it.
I'm going to be happy whether the Leafs get Strome or Marner.
Right.
But I'm kind of hoping for, like, you know, that little excitement. I'm hoping for something big.
Like, get fifth, get both.
Yes.
Like, oh, my God, trade, if the Leafs got
trade
both.
Kessel and this and that, and, you know, they make this big deal. Even if it flops 3 years down the road, for this summer, I want something big.
See, lower, like, Leaf standards. You don't want the cup. You just want something cool to talk about.
Right now.
Yes,
right now.
I want it now.
You know, you could have that 1 5-cent icicle, yeah. You know, to eat right now. Or if you wait an hour, we can give you 3 big scoops of ice cream.
No,
I can't wait. I want it now. That's our mentality, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I completely agree. But bigger acquisitions are... Any big move is usually going to come with some skepticism whether it'll work. Like if the Leafs draft Marner or Strome, you don't know. If the Leafs make a trade for Kessel, you don't know. Right now, I would say the club that's in this town that has proved maybe just as much as the Raptors in that if you make the right move, it can change a franchise. The acquisition of Sebastian Giovinco has single-handedly, I think, changed the perception of TFC, not only because he seems to like it here, want to be here, enjoying his time here. Man, he could be the best player in Major League Soccer.
I rarely hear any interviews of Giovinco. I don't know if that's just me.
They're mostly in Italian, so he's like translated, I believe.
Right, but I mean, there's so few things to hate about the guy because I never hear anything from him.
Right.
But man, oh man, on the field, is he not exciting to watch?
Yeah.
Like, how many goals has he missed? How many opportunities? Even when he has the ball in his feet on the left side or the right side, and he does those quick little tick, tick, tick around one or two players.
Yeah.
That and then he makes this horrible cross in the middle.
Yeah.
But it's still so exciting to watch.
Right.
And when he's on, I was such a doubter when they got him. I thought he was too small for this league because I thought this league was very a rough league.
Yeah, rough
MLS
and tumble.
Compared to European soccer, that I thought that the grind would be too much for him. I still think it might. The one thing that most soccer players don't take into consideration is when you're playing in Italy and you play your 30-odd games a year, I think 32 games a year or 30 games a year, you're taking, you know, a 2-hour, you know, an hour and a half bus ride.
Right.
From Rome to Napoli, right, to face Naples. Not so in North America. In North America, we're talking, you go, you know, 5-hour flight to the West Coast where you go across 3 time zones, right?
Right,
you
have to
get a body. Like, the traveling alone, wear and tear, and I thought that would be so much. But he's handling it. And not only handling it, he is excelling.
Right.
Player of the week. Several weeks already this season, not only scoring goals, but assisting on them, phenomenal all around.
The physicality, I think I'm okay with in the MLS, because Serie A is probably one of the toughest leagues to play in. It's one of the dirtiest leagues in soccer, and I'm not talking like Sepp Blatter dirtiest. I mean, like, literally on the field. Guys hack. But I think you're right. It's fantastic to see him excel, and it's really cool that... Like, Toronto loves a little guy.
And it doesn't get much littler than Giovinco.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, Jovinko's my height. I'm 5'5". But he plays massive. He's a big player on the field. And I think this weekend, yesterday, Toronto got to see what TFC is firing on all cylinders. It was just like, Giovinco, goal. Wicked pass to Jozy Altidore. Or sorry, that was Michael
that was Bradley.
Bradley, wicked but goal. Beautiful pass to Jozy Altidore. Wicked goal. And that's something that's always been my biggest pet peeve with the MLS. Everybody's got the worst touch I've ever seen. But the TFC's club is starting to develop that soft touch. They have a little bit of the ticky-tack. They're able to get out of their zone a little bit more concisely. And it's because you have a broad spectrum of players that are actually worth to be designated.
Yes.
And you look at Bradley. When they got him, they said, well, I mean, okay, yeah, you have, you know, your bloody big deal who made a bloody big disaster of his time with Toronto.
Probably one of the best things, though, that could happen for Bradley.
Because right.
He came in a bit under the shadows. And everything was deferred to Defoe.
Yeah, and you looked at it and you said, wow, you know what? The TFC could potentially have one of the best, if not the best, midfielder in the MLS. You know, not being an overager, essentially. Then now you're looking at your striker and you're saying, oh, wow, Jozy Altidore. I mean, the guy has the touch in the MLS. He hasn't been showing it on an international scale when the quality gets better. But in the MLS, he should be a top five. And then you have arguably one of the best winger slash forwards, if not the best damn player in the MLS, in Jovinko. And I have to say, Konopka has been great in net. I like the upgrade. I really do.
For me, it's going to boil down to, again, in terms of how successful they are. And again, success is making the playoffs.
Yeah.
Going to come back to their back four. And how consistently they can perform. Because you're looking at a situation where they still occasionally give up that stupid goal. The way Toronto FC are playing right now in terms of their formation, especially against the weaker team like the Impact, they are going to be pressing. Their midfield is very good in terms of getting the ball back and pushing forward, but they're vulnerable to the counterattack. And there was a couple of times last night, Montreal counterattack should have had better results. And they, you know, one guy flubbed a shot. The second time, two TFC defenders went to go mark the same man and left a winger wide open to come in. So again, they're going to have to work on that to tidy that up so that they can win.
Yeah.
Man, can this team score?
Right.
Or should be able to score. I know they lost 2-0 last week. The one thing, getting back to Jovinko and getting the rough play, the one thing, again, in MLS that you don't have in other European leagues, the refereeing is not up to par here.
For sure.
Not even close to being up to par. Because there have been a number of occasions. And this is not me beating a Toronto red shirt. This is me just saying that the refereeing is at times atrocious.
Yeah.
Right. And then they just can't keep up. They don't have enough experience, enough repetition in terms of being in big-time games. And, you know, I agree with Bradley when he said that last year at some of the really weird calls that happened. But overall, how can you not be excited about this team? They are, like I said, not only getting the results, which is good to see, but they're playing exciting soccer.
Yeah.
Maybe, he shouts into the microphone, almost good enough for you to take your dad one more time. Not yet, I know.
I'll try.
Let him watch a few of the highlights, yeah, you know. You make a highlights.
He was
on that.
So mad, man. I've never seen somebody more disappointed. It's like I told him I quit school. Like, he's like, we need to leave. Yeah. Like, I can't do this. But I don't blame him. Like, that was bad.
Oh, that was bad.
Yeah, that was bad.
But you like I said, you never know right now because...
Yeah, like, I think Torsten Frings was on that team.
Because even we noticed that there's a difference in terms of how they're playing.
Other than their back four... and Konopka and their goaltending, but I think that's not, it's not resolved. I think it's a little better.
Definitely better. Shrew back there, Zanetta.
Yeah.
Much stronger.
Right. The back four is maybe the only question mark, because like you were saying, the offense is fantastic, but they've been pretty decent. I mean, they haven't looked out of whack, and I think that's the most frustrating part of most MLS games, where when you do see low quality soccer, it starts to become like, you know, the house league bees buzzing around the ball. And they haven't done much of that. Their system has been structured pretty decent, especially for a coach like Vanney, who's been questioned so much. He's got them playing pretty well. And I mean, granted, the skill doesn't hurt either. But, I mean, they definitely got it on track a little bit better than the rest of Toronto's organizations right now that are playing.
I agree. I remember there was a... I can't remember his name right now. The Montreal Impact defender got a yellow card yesterday. Kumin, I think his name was.
He might be right.
can be playing anywhere in Europe right now.
Yeah.
Chose Montreal, not because of anything else other than the fact that his daughter has a disease and best hospitals are here in Canada, and he came to play for them.
Nice story.
So, I mean, I'm you know, hope everything wish well.
100%.
But there, it just brings out that there are many positives in terms of that the skill level, not just with Toronto coming out, but others as well. And so, you know, I would probably get, you know, just getting back to it, a red Jovinko jersey. I mean, right. like if any Toronto player right now, there's probably only one other player in any other team other than Jovinko that I would get a jersey of right now. And that other player, Josh Donaldson.
Oh, boss. Boss. He should just be bringer of boss things because he's sick.
I mean, as
so good.
As great and as fantastic as the Pop and Joe podcast is,
right.
And trust me, the Pop and Joe podcast is unreal. As great and fantastic. If we just played that highlight reel catch over and over and over and over again for the entire podcast,
it'd be fine.
It'd still be great. 100%. Oh my God, he was phenomenal last night with that catch.
Yeah. You know what I think is the only flaw with Josh Donaldson?
He's not Canadian?
No, he's not a closer. That's his biggest problem. Like, he can't pitch. Josh Donaldson does everything well. And the guy just can't pitch. If he could pitch, they'd make a statue for Josh Donaldson. Right now, it'd be Josh Donaldson, then it would be Paul Beeston. Then, like, then it would be, like, Alomar. Because Josh Donaldson has just... He's been everything that everybody thought, I think, Jose Bautista was for the team.
I agree. So what you're telling me is that his stat line is going to read something like... 8 innings, third base, 2-for-4, 1 home run, 3 RBIs,
yeah,
and a save.
Yeah, and a low ERA, like a 1.6. And like, that's on one inning. That's unreal. That's like a run every like 5-6 games.
And you bring in somebody like Goins or whoever to come in to cover third base, yeah, while he pitches. Actually, you know what? Go with 8 men because he'll pitch so well that you don't
he'll
even
be
need
fine. He can get over to third.
You don't even need a third, yeah, baseman. Okay.
Yeah, he'll be all right. He's sick. He's just sick.
He is. And... The Jays, we're talking about, you know, TFC's offense. The Jays' offense has been, we knew it was strong. We knew, yeah, it was strong. But they, I think, this week have surpassed 400 runs. Yeah. They lead the league in runs. Not only, I think, in second place, 350.
Yeah, man, they're getting to a point where they might start becoming in the conversation of historically the best offense in baseball.
Yes.
And that's astounding.
And I mean, still lots of baseball to go. We always say this.
Yeah, it's early.
But they're what? I think they played 70 games so far, 75, yeah, something like that. And I look, something is, and I look at it and I go, at the beginning of the season, how dare you? How dare you compare the starting 5 or 6 to WAMCO of the 93 Blue Jays?
Yeah.
How dare you do that? You don't compare to them. Okay, maybe you can
maybe
start
doing it
a little bit now.
Yeah.
You know, and now you just hope that everybody, you know, winds up healthy going on. But I think the entire Jay story can be listed as Drew Hutchison. He's what, 6-1, and he's got an ERA of
like six. Yeah, having,
you know,
fantasy baseball. Keep up the wins, bud.
So, but I mean, the truth of the matter is, yeah, we'll give up 6 runs, but we can score 7.5 a game.
I just really hope that, you know, before we wrap up, I really hope that the Jays do something to help insulate this team. Because when you have stories like Chris Colabello, Josh Donaldson, even Marco Estrada now, your young guy in Osuna, the whole bats playing fantastic from like 1 through 9 have been studs. Please, please, God, help them a little bit somehow. Go out and get something to help this team because I think that might push them forward. It might give them more confidence, and I think it will keep the train rolling. I mean, you know, shout out Jerry Howarth. Jose Reyes had a really, really big toss coming off his back foot. He made it.
Yep.
He's playing great.
Well, and
hit 300.
Just, you know, it's that little bit of an edge. I can't agree with you more when you have a situation like we harped. Okay. I harped.
Yeah,
I really, really harped on their defense. It was horrible.
Right.
Bad enough that their pitching wasn't good, but their defense, you know, pop flies and Reyes as well, and,
yeah,
and all these things. But in that one start with Estrada going in his perfect game, you have Bautista sliding catch into the wall in the outfield.
Yeah.
You have the Jonathan diving into the second row. making the catch, they can play, and they can play defense well when their mind's into it. They just need that little bit of an edge.
Well, we hope they get it, because without offense, you don't need great pitching. You just need some good pitching and guys that not blow it coming out of the bullpen.
Yep. No, I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Well, thanks for listening to the Pop and Joe podcast. Enjoy the NBA draft tonight. We will touch on what the Raptors do on that next week and enjoy the Leafs extravaganza tomorrow night. And go, Jays, go. Let's go, Reds.
Forza, yo, Jogo, Inco.
There you go.
Be good, boys.